If you haven't already heard the record-breaking podcast where Shaq interviewed Kobe...
What's up, Kobe?
What's up, my man?
Well, no worries, because you can get it right now at PodcastOne.com. Just click on the big podcast with Shaq. And while you're there, check out Shaq's other A-list guests. Charles Barkley, Kyrie Irving, Dan Patrick, DeMarco Murray, Adam Sandler, Ronda Rousey, Nick Cannon, Rich Eisen, George Lopez, and so many more, like Kobe.
We've gotten a fist fight.
That just showed me that, you know what, this kid ain't gonna back down.
At PodcastOne.com. That's PodcastOne.com.
Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast, and now here's the guy who just had the best week ever, Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome to a weekly, again, I don't know if it's weekly, potential, this is like a pilot for a show. We're doing This Week in Reality TV, talking about Survivor, Big Brother, and Amazing Race. I don't know if it's necessarily This Week in Reality TV, but it's definitely This Week in RHAP. And we're going to be talking about the week that was and what a crazy last couple of days it's been for me, especially from a week ago today. I've talked to Mike Boogie. I've talked to Dan Gieseling. We've ranked the top 30 Survivor seasons. We had the premiere of Survivor Cambodia. Dallas Cowboys, what did they do? They lost Tony Romo. That's what you're cheering about, Jordan Parhar.
Yeah, I'm so glad. No, I'm devastated. I need. They're 2-0 though, Rob, and the Redskins and the Giants are doing so bad. So I think that, and the Eagles too. So I think maybe there's just a chance. You never know.
Well, let me introduce you, because we're on Blab Live right now, but the people that are listening to the podcast don't know necessarily that there's another person here, and also don't know who this person is. But Jordan Parhar, the host of the Big Brother Rehap Up on reality TV, Rehap Ups, is here with us. If you don't know Jordan, if you're not a Big Brother enthusiast, Jordan is a longtime RHAP listener who was recently on Big Brother Canada 3. He did extremely well. For those of you guys who don't know who he is, he really killed it. And he is a expert on all things reality TV, and especially RHAP. And he's joining us live. Jordan, how are you?
Oh, I'm excellent, Rob. Thanks for having me. And yes, I absolutely did kill it. Volunteering to go on the block, throwing the power veto, getting blindsided. I think that I played one of the most stellar games in the history of Big Brother Canada and reality television in general. So I'm honored to be here. Thank you for having me on this show. And you posed the question at the beginning of the podcast, is this going to get renewed? And I'm sorry, but you chose me as your guest. And I think that is really, really not a good idea for a pilot episode of anything, for that matter.
Well, so you volunteered to be the guest. So I took you up on your offer to volunteer to sit here next to me on this show. So I had to do it. Anyway, so incredibly busy week. The Big Brother 17 finale, the premiere of The Amazing Race, plus exit interviews with the Big Brother Final 3, plus I talked to the first person kicked off of Survivor. So really just a million different things to talk to. And the cool thing about Blab, if you're joining us here for the first time using blab.im, what we can do is that potentially we could have up to 4 people simultaneously on the show. So we're going to be hopefully taking questions from you guys in the chat room to discuss. But then also, if you guys have things that you want to talk about, we're going to try to be bringing some of you who are watching the show up here into the show to talk to us. And what we ask is that just you have your headphones in and hopefully have a solid connection. And you can do that either from your computer or your mobile device. So it's going to be hopefully something that's very interactive and very fun, and something that we're playing around with here on a Saturday. And I love getting to hear the feedback, because I think that what separates podcasts and why I like to do it so much than, you know, more so than say like a radio show, it's not just me sitting here and never, you know, hearing back what you say. I try to read as many comments as I can on robhasawebsite.com and on other platforms like Twitter and on Facebook, and hear what you guys are saying about the show. But it would be really cool to also hear what you guys are saying in the flesh as well about this week that went by. And so we are going to be talking spoilers for Survivor, Big Brother, and The Amazing Race. So just to be clear, we are going to be spoiling those 3 shows that are be coming up in terms of what happened already this past week. So if you're all caught up, you should be good. But just in case there's any confusion here, let me at least play for you one time the spoiler song by Ryan Elder.
The Office of Civil Defense has issued the following message. This is
a spoiler
warning.
A spoiler.
Warning means that an actual
spoiler
against this country has been detected and that protective action should be taken.
All right, it's raining spoilers now. But spoilers in the sense of what has already happened. Now, we're not going to talk about it. We don't know anything that happened in terms of that. And probably, I don't know if we're going to have a ton of questions about The Amazing Race. That, you know, we will, if unless somebody has a question about that, I won't be going there because I know that was only on last night. I think that's the probably the one that people may not have seen yet. That could be a DVR show, Jordan.
Yes, absolutely. And I will not, as I did in the pre-show, I will not accidentally spoil it unless there is a question specifically about the first team eliminated.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Okay. So, so many different things this week in terms of what we saw on reality TV. What do you think was the biggest story of the week? What was the story? Who were, we had so many good guys, so many bad guys. Well, what is the biggest story when we look back on this week? Is it Big Brother 17?
Well, oh man, that's hard. I think probably the biggest story for me is that Vanessa Rousseau did not win Big Brother 17. And I think it was setting up this entire season that she was going to win. And there is no quote unquote winner's edit on Big Brother because it's happening live and we don't know what's happening. But I think that it was really setting up for Vanessa to win. It was her game to lose and she didn't come through with the win. So I think that's a huge story.
Yeah. What's
this? Sorry, Rob, go ahead.
Yeah, what's the parallel here? Do we have a comparison that we could say Vanessa not winning Big Brother was like what? On is there another Big Brother? Is there another Survivor that we could compare it to? I know if people have said it's like it was like me in the Amazon. I'm not sure if that was necessarily the same. I don't think it's you know, and it's hard for me to make comparisons with myself. But can you think of any other comparisons that this was like?
Man, yeah, I think that's actually a really good one for you with you, Rob, and Survivor Amazon. I would argue, though, that Steve, and no shade towards Matthew Von Ertfeld and Jenna Maraska, but I think that Steve was more involved, I guess, and a better. I would say he was better in his game than those guys were in their games, respectively. In terms of Big Brother, I mean, you could say that it was a robbery. But the one that came to my mind was Big Brother 3. Daniel Reyes not winning that season, but she did end up going to the final two.
I think that's not exactly the same because you had Danielle losing to the jury,
yes.
who was a bitter jury based on them seeing the TV show. And I know I've said that there's no such thing as a bitter jury, but I think that when the jury gets to watch the TV show, I think that can potentially make them bitter.
I think one person too, Big Brother 5, I think Diane getting cut at that final two when Drew takes Cowboy. I think that's one where, I mean, and I get Diane Henry's not as good as Vanessa Rousseau, but I think that's an example in Big Brother. If you want to put it in Big Brother Canada terms for people who watch Big Brother Canada, I think this is very similar to Big Brother Canada 2 when John cut Netta at the final three.
Yeah, let's talk about that because I see a lot of people in the chat room have also made that analogy. But is that the same because were Steve and Vanessa a pair in the way that John and Netta had been to get to that point in the game?
Yeah, I mean, it's not, I mean, this is the thing, right? I think that every season is going to be different. I think that if we're trying to come up with a comparison to something that is exactly the same, and especially in a game like Big Brother, in which there are so many variables, it's very tough. It's not exactly the same because John and Netta were like this. They were just so tight from very early on in Big Brother Canada 2. Whereas with Vanessa and Steve, yes, they were tight, but they formed the Students of Sound Alliance very early on in the game. But the difference is that Steve never really fully trusted Vanessa. I mean, he did early on, but he quickly caught on to her. And I think that Steve was never really Vanessa's number one. Vanessa had made all of these deals with all of these different people. She had her hand in all these different pies. And I don't think that Steve was her one go-to. Whereas with John and with Netta, towards the end, they probably both realized that they were going to cut each other. But throughout the majority of the game, they were each other's number ones. They pretty much were the entire time. And I think that's where things differ a little bit here. But for me, just looking at it, just off the top of my head, I think that is the best comparison for this situation with Vanessa.
I almost feel like it might have been, and again, this is not a apples to apples thing, but it's almost like if in Survivor Kageyan, if Wu decided to get rid of Tony because, you know, yes. Wu and Tony were not always on the same page. You know, it wasn't so much like that Wu was 100% with Tony. There was a point where Wu has a flirtation with going in a different direction and going with, he goes on that reward with Spencer and Cass, and then he comes back and then Tony is asking him, so Wu, what's going on? What are you guys doing? They didn't talk about voting me out. And Wu's like, no, man. Like, Spencer said he wants to vote out Tasha. Like, what? Tasha? And so I think that there is a little bit more like that. And again, I think that maybe if you say that Cass was like the person who probably couldn't win in the end, like Liz, but I think that Liz probably had more jury votes, certainly with Austin and her twin sister, than Cass did. But it's just a interesting thing where you had somebody who was so much in control of what was going on. And with all due respect to Steve, who played a great game for him, I think that it was really Vanessa's season, and then he just kind of pulled the rug out from under her and took the person who was the more beatable opponent to the end to win. One of the things that I'm not sure that we talked about this week was going back to that final six where it was Julia at the, you know, on the block with Liz, and they got Vanessa to vote out Liz and to vote out Julia instead of Liz. Do you think that that would have changed anything had it been then heading into the final five, Julia, Austin, and Vanessa?
I think that if it was Julia, Austin, and Vanessa heading into that final five, I think that people might have started to gun for Vanessa a little bit sooner just because everybody was so scared of Austin and Liz. Although that final five HOH, Vanessa did win that. So we would have probably, I think we probably would have seen a similar outcome. Austin probably would have gone home that week. And then the following week, I mean, it just would have been the one twin who is a kind of a lone wolf at that point. So I feel like, I honestly think the outcome would have been very, very similar, especially because Vanessa was the person that ultimately won that final five at a household competition. So yeah, I think we're talking about if the decision's different. I mean, I hate to just use some cookie cutter analysis, but just based on their positioning in the game at that point and how things ended up turning out with Austin going out in the manner that he did, I think that it probably would have been Steve beating Julia in the final two at the end of the day had Liz gone home instead.
Yeah, that was one of the questions I really wanted to ask Vanessa, but I didn't get to ask her too many questions in my exit interview with her. One of the questions that I had asked her was about her vote for for Liz instead of Steve. And what she had said was that she had made a deal with Liz that whichever one of them got to the end, she would vote for them. And of course, in my head, I'm thinking like, well, you know, those deals that she had in the house were not worth very much. I'm not sure why this one was. I had gotten some people had from Twitter, I had seen, well, why didn't you ask her about that? And while I did not want to put her on the spot in that way, I feel like that when you do these interviews, like I try not to, make it be a confrontational sort of thing because I feel like it hurts the interview. I did ask her, okay, so then hypothetically speaking, if there was no deal, would you have voted for, Steve? And she said that she felt like that there was not a big difference between Steve and Liz strategically. Do you think that, does that speak to, we talked about the night of the finale. Okay, well, when she has some time, give her some credit. She just got voted out. But now, you know, 12 hours had passed. You know, she had really every opportunity in the world to sort of backtrack. You know, I think Steve probably had it, but, you know, I was a little upset in the moment. Is this just more of a symptom of a, I don't want to use the word dishonesty, but is it like that she's out of touch with what's going on inside and what she's telling us out in the world?
Yeah, and it's tough. I mean, the thing that I was really looking forward to with Vanessa coming out of the house was we would finally get to see her be honest about everything about her game and all this kind of stuff, because there were very many times in the diary room and in various other instances throughout the season where I've been kind of skeptical with all the stuff that Vanessa's saying. And Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the fact that I think the honestly, Rob, I think what it comes down to is Vanessa, her answer there, like, oh, well, I made a deal with Liz, and that's just honestly, like, that's what I got to do, and I had to do that. I mean, I think that's just her justifying voting, being bitter and voting that way, because had it been Liz who cut Vanessa, I would Vanessa really vote for Liz in that scenario? I don't think so. I think she'd be voting for Steve. I do think, though, that I do think that she was telling the truth when she said, well, I don't really see too much of a difference in Liz and Steve's game. Maybe there's some inkling of truth in that, because I think just based on her perception of Steve, I think she really underestimated him and didn't really see a lot of what he was doing throughout the season. I think when she goes back and watches it, I think she's going to have a newfound perspective of him. And that's fair, because as somebody who's played Big Brother and been in the house and been in the jury and I had preconceived notions about certain people. And then when I went back and watched the show, those notions were completely different. And I got to see, oh, wow, like my eyes were opened, and I got to see, wow, this person actually was playing a really solid game and really doing a lot more than said other person. So I think on a rewatch, I think that she's going to realize, yeah, Steve played the much better game than Liz. But at the time, I don't know. I just think that that's a case of her being a little bit bitter. And that's fine. Honestly, it's fine. If you're bitter in that moment, just own the fact that you're bitter about it. Because if I was in, we're all human here, Rob. If I was in a final three scenario and I thought that I had played a game like Vanessa, I worked 24/7 for 98 days, all only to get to the final three and then get cut to make the exact same amount of money as 11th place, I'd be pretty choked and I would be mad. And I think a lot of people that are on Big Brother are emotional. Vanessa's clearly emotional. And I think that that was just an emotional decision in that moment. So I think that I would have respected a lot more if Vanessa would have just been like, look, you know, I was upset about the whole situation. That's why I did it. And that's why I voted for Liz. But Vanessa's not going to do that. And fair enough. That's just Vanessa Russo. So, oh, well.
Well, this is something that I do have some experience in, because just to go back to that parallel that I had mentioned of Survivor the Amazon, where I had played with Jenna and Matthew for most of the game. I swapped tribes and I had been with them. I'd been with Jenna since day 13 or 14 and had been with Matthew for the entire 38 days that I was in the game. And so I had a similar decision. And again, I'm voting a day after I got voted out, so it's not exactly that. But I think I had somewhat of an open mind. But I did, part of me when I voted for Jenna was like, well, you know what? I'm not 100% sure. I kind of feel like Matthew screwed me a little bit here with trying to, like, that seemed very quick that he threw, like, I feel like maybe he threw that challenge also. I do feel like between Jenna and Matthew, though, I don't think that there was a disparity there like Liz and Steve. I think that Jenna and Matthew were on somewhat even footing. I also voted with the majority, so it wasn't like I was out on an island like Vanessa was with voting with Liz's boyfriend and Liz's twin sister. Everybody else, all of the other impartial people, voted for Steve in that scenario. So I think that, Jenna versus Matthew was probably more of a coin flip, but it was probably more 60-40 for Jenna. Whereas I think that Steve versus Liz was probably like 80-20 for Steve in terms of, like, if you were going to compare what they actually did in the game, or 75-25. And I think that Vanessa, it ends up not as good of a look to be voting against Steve in that spot, and then also not backtracking that a bit.
Yeah, for sure. And I think also too, Rob, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, you got voted out. You got to go to that toga party where Mark Burnett was there. You got to talk to the jurors. You got to ask them, you know, what's on your mind. You could talk about the game. You could kind of vent a little bit about everything, I'm sure. And I think that probably helped you decompress everything. And I know I'm sure it was very tough. I mean, you thought you were in a position to win, and then all of a sudden, you know, 24 hours before or whatever, you don't. But I think that's huge. And I think that I think maybe if Vanessa had a day, and if this is again why I wish that Big Brother would just go back to the Big Brother 10 and before format of leaving the jury, having the jury segment or having the jury question the final two a day or two or whatever before the actual finale. That way, everybody has time to decompress. They have time to ask full questions, because really, honestly, those questions on the live show, they're very quick. It's like a 15, 20 second question with a 30 second response or something like that. Final Tribal Council, you guys are there for hours, correct?
No, I don't know. Hours. I feel like probably, 60 minutes. And again, I was at a 7.
Minutes, Rob.
Yeah.
60 minutes is more than 2.
6 minutes, yeah.
Yeah.
I hear you. Let me take a question that came to us here on Blab. And again, the way that you can submit a question, for those of you guys who are just joining us, it's /R, and then type your question, and it pops up with that question bubble. And so this is from Laurel J1, who wants to know, how would the jury have responded if they gave her the win and then learned that she was rich? So if the jury voted for Vanessa and then it was like, okay, surprise, I am I've made $4.5 million. Now, again, I don't know what the, correlation is of between I've made $4.5 million playing poker, but I have, how much of that money and how much did you lose playing poker? That I don't know. So I don't really know if Vanessa, because she's won $4.5 million playing poker, makes her a multimillionaire, but she is a lot wealthier than just about, I think, probably anybody else that was in the game. How do you think the jury would have reacted to that sort of aha, ta-da?
I don't know. It would be interesting as somebody who's been on a jury if that would have happened. And one of the person who ended up winning the game came out and said, Sarah Hanlon, if she said, hey, you know what? Actually, I don't work a deadbeat job. I actually have millions of dollars. I'm pro something, and I have all of this money. I honestly don't, for me personally, I wouldn't have been too upset by that. I think that at the end of the day, you want to vote. People vote for A, who they like the most, and B, who they want to see win. And I think this notion of, oh, well, who deserves the money and all this kind of stuff, I think that's kind of an old school notion in reality TV. And I think nowadays, if that were to happen, I don't think people would be that upset. I think that maybe a few of the recruits, maybe who don't really, that aren't huge fans of the show, maybe they would be upset by that. But I don't think that they would be that up in arms. Maybe I'm crazy, but I think that they all respected Vanessa's game. They all thought, wow, she played her tail off. She did such an amazing job. And I think they would probably, at least I hope they would be rational enough to realize, hey, you know what? She played the best game. It doesn't matter how much money she has or how much money she's worth or any of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think it's not like Derek last season where it was like, hey, it turns out that I'm a police officer. And it was like, what? But still, it's not like a game changer. It's just like, okay, that he had a different job that we didn't expect that he had. Where this, I don't think we have the parallel on Survivor or Big Brother where somebody was like, I'm actually this very wealthy person and I was pretending that I wasn't, and that you guys just didn't know that.
Well, I think if Russell Hantz were to have won Survivor Samoa, I think we would have, or Survivor Heroes versus Villains, I think we would have seen that type of thing, but we never saw it. So yes, well, I do agree with you.
And also, well, yeah, we don't know exactly we don't know exactly, what is, what is Russell's ultimate, occupation. And I think that maybe he might have misrepresented, his own earnings to us, the audience, and so on.
I'm already a millionaire, Rob. I don't need this game. No, why would Russell lie to us?
I don't know. Again, we don't know. We don't know. But that is does not seem. I don't know. There's a lot of unanswered questions that go into that. All right, so we're taking your questions, and if you want to pop on and ask us a question live, all you do is just click that open seat, and then I can go ahead and bring people into the conversation to talk with Jordan and I here on a Week in Reality TV wrap up. All right, this is from at Inclusive Host, which is the amazing web hosting provider that is powering Rob Has a Website and Post Show Recaps. They want to know, can we expect a Big Brother edition of Know It Alls next season with Jordan Parhar and Steve Moses?
Well, I think following the theme of Survivor Know It Alls, I know nothing about how to win the game of Big Brother. So following that theme, I would be good. However, Steve Moses is much more lovable, and he's much better at the game. He knows much more about Big Brother than I do. So I think that perhaps I would volunteer to give that spot to Steve if Rob so desires.
No, you're not losing your job. Well, I would love to talk with Steve next season. And I think that that he would definitely provide really good insight. You know, we talk with Ian once a week on the show, and he does a really good job. And Ian has, I think, become a much better podcaster. This has been the third season in a row that we've talked with Ian. And I think that Ian this season has become, you know, really, you know, as the best that he has been. And I think he's much less nervous. And I think he has his thoughts together a lot better than like in the early days of when we were talking with him. I think that Steve will probably also be that. Like, I think that probably like next summer, I think that he'll be so, but I really think that he has all of the knowledge. I think as he becomes more and more comfortable with doing stuff like this, I bet Steve will also be really good at doing podcasts and whatnot. This is a question also from Scott St. Pierre wants to know, Jordan, did you watch The Amazing Race Canada?
Ooh, Scott, the great Scott St. Pierre.
Of course.
Wow, thank you for the question, Scott. Believe it or not, I unfortunately did not watch the season of Amazing Race Canada. I was so encompassed by Big Brother US and just coming off of my season of Big Brother that I just didn't get around to it. I do want to tune in though for next season because I heard really good things. And there were a lot of people from my cast watched it. So sadly, no, but hopefully next year.
Okay. Did you hear any good stories from Big Brother finale parties, Jordan? Anything that you could share with us through the Big Brother grapevine?
I actually, believe it or not, did not really hear too much. I don't think there was anything too crazy going on from what I know. But I think the problem with that is that there was approximately zero people from my season of Big Brother at the Big Brother finale.
Yes.
So that doesn't really help. And I think the only Canadian who was there was Peter Brown. Yeah. So,
you know, it's funny. I got a text message from Peter Brown at like 10:30 last night after I had already gone to bed. Like, hey, we're at Lucky Strike. Come down. It was like, you know that you must not know me, Peter Brown. We don't leave my house at 10:30 at night and go out. Come on now. Come on.
Yeah, he clearly does not. But yeah, I know Peter was there. I think Meg and some of the other cast were there. And then some of them are in Vegas. I know Kevin from my season.
Is that
Vegas
a thing? Is that going on this weekend?
Yeah, that is going on this weekend. Yeah. So Kevin's in Vegas. So he's the only person from my season that's actually in Vegas. He didn't go to the finale. And he's there. He said that James Ryan is there. Danielle Reyes.
Come on. Come on now. Of course he's there.
Of course James Ryan is there. Jason Roy is there. I don't know. Oh, he said Jeremy from Big Brother 15. Jeremy Maguire, the Maguire that sucks, is there.
I had a very funny experience with him in a like I went to the reality rally a couple of years ago, and I was in like a taxi with him and Danielle Reyes and my brother. Like we were going like we were in like the crappy hotel they put us in, and everybody else was in like staying in like that one hotel, and we were like in some other hotel, and you know, he was really carrying on. And it's not safe for work, you know, the kinds of things that he was saying, but it was very like my brother was really he was amazed.
Oh man, Jeremy Maguire. I think Jeremy, from what I've heard, Jeremy is actually a great dude. So J-Mac that sucks, Jeremy Maguire, I think that he's a good dude, and I think he'd be a cool guy to see again. He's interesting, but yeah, I've yet to meet Jeremy. Hopefully I will meet him next year at Reality Rally.
Let me ask you a take that I saw over on Twitter yesterday. I saw Max Dawson had tweeted about how that he had gone to the party for Big Brother and had said that, you know, Big Brother people tend to stay in the VIP only section, whereas the survivors are more likely to commingle with the people who are at the party. Do you find that to be was that a fair or unfair assessment?
I'll be honest with you, Rob. When I read that, I burst out laughing because after my season, we went to Niagara Falls and we did a similar thing. And we walked into this nightclub, and there was all these Big Brother people there. And there was this VIP section. And I was standing around talking to some of the fans, and everybody was just going off into the corner. So I do think that I don't have a ton of experience with that. I've only been to one sort of finale sort of thing, and I haven't been to anything with Survivor people. But from my experience, I think that might be a thing. However, Big Brother fans, and I love Big Brother fans, I love you, but there are some Big Brother fans that are really passionate, and some of the other alumni, I think, are, and maybe I was just because I was naive, I think some of them were just like, okay, like they say hi for 5 minutes and then they kind of go hang out and do their own thing. So yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's a thing, but it is a very interesting observation by Max Dawson, and I will continue to record some findings on that at the hopefully a couple of finales that I go to beyond this.
Okay, so let's bring in our first caller, great friend of the podcast, longtime friend of the podcast, Jessica Frey is here with us here on Blab. Jessica looks like she's just waking up this morning.
Yeah.
Now, Jessica, hey, you were at the party for the Big Brother. Now, is that true? Were the Big Brother alumni in the VIP section?
There was a little VIP section, like, because it was crazy, though. Like, you walked in, and, like, first off, unlike Survivor finales, you had to pay, like, $40. And it was, like, packed to the wall. Like, it was, like, it was sweating. It was, so packed. Like, people were mobbing Johnny Mac. I was, like, surprised I got a picture with him. Of course, James was being mobbed. But, like, I ended up, like, somehow getting into the VIP section because I had friends there that were, like, with Audrey. But it was, all the Big Brother people were there. They only left to get, like, their drinks and stuff. But so they had, like, their little, like, square. Like, I know, like, Steve was there with his mom for a second. But it was so hard to hear, like, and had, I think some of, like, the Amazing Race people, like, the blind date people were off of, like, outside. Smart.
Because
that was, I don't know, they were, like, so packed, but it was.
But in fairness, I can understand that a little bit in terms of like these Big Brother people, they were in the house for 98 days. They haven't seen one other person, and now people want to mob them. And it's like, I just got out of the house yesterday. Like, I'm not, this is freaking me out. And I can understand why they would want to do that. So I see both sides of it, but it's also like people come to the party because they want to see these people and not like be behind the velvet rope. I remember I went to one of these parties for Big Brother 14, and like there was like the VIP section, and Nicole and I were there, and I remember being like, okay, well, there's all the people that are in there's Frank, there's Ashley, there's all the people, like, and so it was like, okay, well, they were sort of up here and we were all in like the the cheap seats in there. I did get, by the end of the night, I did get to say congratulations to Ian and Dan. I did.
Yeah.
By the end
That's
of the
good.
Night.
Yeah. I was surprised at how many Big Brother people were there, like actually and recognized, like Jen from BB8. Like, I mean, then there was Cody and Derek and then Frankie Grande. I was like, I'm too close to Frankie Grande.
And you got close to Frankie Grande?
Yeah, like he would like walk by all the time. Like,
but when you were in the VIP section, right?
Yeah, no, even then he was like walking past like in there to like go get a drink and stuff. Ugh.
Yeah.
Okay. Frankie takeover.
It was a Frankie takeover. And you talked to Johnny Mac?
Yeah, a little bit. Like he was like, when I got a picture with him and he was nice. And Austin and Liz were all together. I told Julia once outside and she was like, can you guys tell me apart? And I was like, yeah, it's super obvious. Don't worry.
And did you talk to Johnny Mac and see if he wants to come on Rob as a podcast?
I don't think I got to really ask him questions besides, okay. Oh, you're amazing.
He was not taking questions. All right. No. Any other scoop from the Big Brother 14 or Big Brother 17 party?
Well, Vanessa got engaged. Like,
at
apparently
the party?
Her girl. The night after the finale, apparently her girlfriend wanted to like propose to her like at on the show. But then they said like, oh, Vanessa's not in the final two.
Okay. So they wouldn't let her do it?
I guess not.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, Jessica, anything else you wanted to ask or get off your chest while you're here?
Did you guys already talk about like, so many things went on. Like I just watched Amazing Race. Like I just watched that one. So I'm really sad about.
I know. All right, Jay Frey. We'll talk to you again soon. Okay.
Bye, Jess.
All right. Take care.
How do you like? I don't know.
Okay.
former producer of Rob Has a Web Show.
Yeah, this is just like a, it's just like the Spreecast back then.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's pretty cool.
So it's good to get firsthand information here on the This Week in Reality TV. We can hear from people who are out in the field going to these parties, and then I don't have to go
Absolutely.
To them. It's even better. But no, I do totally get that, why they want to be there. I mean, the thing that does kind of suck, though, is then the alumni come, and then they all want to talk to the people that come. And so then they're all behind there, and then you're sort of sitting there like, hey, it's like packed down here. and we want to talk to the we want to talk to the alumni. We want to talk to the people that just got off the show, and they're all behind the velvet rope.
Yeah, and it's hard too. And I think one of those, it's a good point that you brought up earlier as well, is the Big Brother people are coming right out of the house when they do these things. Whereas when Max Dawson is going to the finale for the Dirty 30 or one of these kind of parties, he's been off of Survivor for months, and he's been watching himself on the show. He's had time to decompress and that kind of stuff. So I think that that is probably the main difference in that mindset there. So in fairness to the Big Brother people, it is tougher for them because they're fresh off of it.
And it's a totally different experience that, you know, we've talked about this so much over the years, where when you go on to Survivor, you go, you film it, and then you come home, and then you sort of like re-acclimate to society and your family, and you have a support system around you. And then the show comes on, and then you gradually become, as you, if you get to the finals or if you win Survivor, you know, over the course of 13, 14 weeks, America and the world becomes more, you know, familiar with you. And if you get recognized or whatever, you know, it happens gradually more and more and more. You're like the frog in the water that's starting to boil, where it's like you don't really realize it as it's happening, but it's gradually getting hotter and you're becoming, you know, somebody who has a little bit more and more notoriety. Whereas Big Brother, you go into the house, you're a complete unknown. You're in the house the whole time the show comes out, and then you come out, and then you are just bombarded by people who not only just watch the show, but are the biggest fans of the show. So the people that have no idea who you are, you don't need to see them. You have no idea, but you have some sort of like an artificially inflated sense of, oh my God, I'm the biggest thing ever. Because everybody I know is just like, oh my God, oh my God, Jordan Parr, it's you, I can't believe it, oh my God. And you just constantly bombarded,
right? I didn't get any of, oh my gosh, it's Jordan Parr, but I
did. From
some
me.
Some people did, absolutely. Yes, but no, it's totally a thing, Rob. And I think that, and the Ginger Ninja himself said this to me, and he said, bro, it's like we're Tom Cruise here, man. But then after, he said, he's like, no, man. He's like, when you get home, it's not. He's like, it's not like this. Like, trust me, man. Because he was pre-jury, so he had already been home. So he knew what it was like. Whereas, some of these people, if you were in the final three or if you were on the jury, you hadn't gone home yet and you hadn't seen what the public reaction to was, and you just run right back into that, then, yeah, I mean, it's very overwhelming. And it's just very odd. The whole Big Brother experience is so strange. And, yeah, and so I totally understand where those people are coming from.
And especially then, you know, you go from out of the house and you have, you know, people, then if you go into some sort of like, you know, if they put a couple of them on the Bold and the Beautiful next week and you have like this, like a very big, you know, crazy experience when you get out. And then even when you get home, people are bombarding you of like, hey, will you do this? And people are emailing you and contacting you. You've been gone the whole summer. And I think it's much easier to get a more inflated sense of, you know, what's going on in your world and who you are and what your status is when you come out of Big Brother as opposed to Survivor. I think it's a little bit more, you're able to stay. Now, believe me, there's plenty of survivors who did not stay grounded. That is 100% a fact. But I think that with Big Brother, I think it's easier to lose your center in terms of like, you know, what is normal and, you know, how close you actually are to it.
Yeah, 100%, and I agree with you for sure. And who are some of these survivors that have not remained grounded, Rob? Let's elaborate a little more. Do we want to name some names?
Survivors that have not remained grounded?
Yeah, just off the top of your head.
I'm trying to think from, you know, in recent seasons. I think that, you know, going back the last few years, I there's nobody that really stands out. But I definitely know from like back in the, yeah, like I can remember like when like, you know, like Dan Liu was putting out his like calendar for his 2004 calendar of stuff like that. And he's like the third person off. It's like, what? We're doing this? We're going to go, you know? And there's definitely like other people that, you know, you've seen throughout the years who've gone like to Survivor Finals and are just sort of like, okay, well now I'm, you know, I'm a big deal now. And then, you know, it definitely comes around.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really do feel bad for a lot of these reality TV people when they do, like the great Dan Liu, who think, wow, yeah, I'm such a big deal. And then that I wonder how it feels for them that day they realize, oh, wait a sec, nobody really cares about who I am. Like that's,
well, from Survivor, you know, that's, it doesn't mean necessarily that nobody cares about you or you're not a talented person or anything like that.
You're not a celebrity. You're not a celebrity. And I think that some of these people at first kind of think that, and it's just not the case.
Right. And believe me, I totally get how it is. And I know that there's probably some people who are listening who are saying, well, aren't you like hypocritical? Because here you are, you know, what is this, like 12 years since you were on your show. But even though the show is Rob Has a Podcast and Rob Has a website.com, I feel like that most of what we do is not me talking about what I did on my season, even though this is a bad example because I did talk about me and my season earlier in this conversation. But this is, you know, I am a person who was on a reality show, but I am talking about, you know, and commentating on what is currently happening on these other reality shows and hopefully adding something to that conversation that hopefully more than just my immediate family wants to listen to.
Oh yeah, this is we're talking This Week in Reality TV or This Week in RHAP. We're not talking This Week on Survivor Amazon. I mean, or Survivor All Stars. I think this is a little bit different. I'll give you a pass, Rob.
Okay, thank you very much. Laurel J1 also wants to know: is this the era of super fan wins on reality TV? It's been the best of times and it's been the worst of times for super fans on reality TV. You know, I'm talking to one right now. And it seems like the super fan has had an interesting plight here. Well, would you say that this has been the official super fan era of reality TV? And does that begin with John Cochran in Survivor South Pacific?
Yeah, you know, honestly, Rob, I would say that that is probably where I would say that's kind of where it started was the, and hello, it's Taryn Armstrong. Oh my goodness, there's Taryn.
Hello.
But Taryn Armstrong joins us on the This Week in Reality TV.
But yeah, I think that totally with Cochran, because if there's no John Cochran, Rob, I don't think we see Ian Terry being cast on Big Brother. I don't think we see these dorky super fans constantly being put on these seasons, because that wasn't really that much of an archetype before. I mean, you could say, Rob, that like you kind of paved the way for that casting archetype. But after you, there wasn't really anybody on Survivor for a while. And then on Big Brother, I mean, we had Eric Stein in Big Brother 8. We had Ronnie Talbot, Big Brother 11. But the super fan archetype, that kind of started with Cochran. And then now with Big Brother, I mean, we've had really, I mean, Big Brother 14, Big Brother 15, Big Brother 16, and now Big Brother 17, we've had super fans win it each of those seasons. So I do think that this has become definitely the era of the super fan. And yes, we do see super fans like myself, like Max Dawson, falling flat on our faces. But because now there are more of these super fans on these shows, there's a higher likelihood that they're going to have a varying range of outcomes. So some of them are going to do really poorly like me, and others of them are going to do excellent like a Steve Moses.
I think this is a really fascinating conversation, because I think that you could really trace it to a lot of other people. I think that to credit it to me, I'm not sure is 100% accurate, because my thing, while I was a super fan of the show, I don't know if that was ever presented in the edit of this is the guy who knows everything about the show. It certainly was the case in reality, but in terms of branding this person, whereas Cochran was put up front as this is the guy who has seen all the show and wrote this paper about it. And in his first moment of the show says, Jeff, could you call me Cochran? Like Colby, or like Donaldson, like Mariano, like Penner. I would like that. I would think I would be part of that legacy. And the irony of that is that he ultimately fulfills that destiny in Survivor Karamoan, becoming one of Jeff's all-time favorite survivors and winning 4 immunity challenges. But that's a story for another Evolution of Strategy conversation. But in terms of that, Taryn, what is your take on that? Does the super fan era of reality TV begin with John Cochran, or could we trace it back to earlier, as I've heard Jordan Parhar say on Big Brother Happy Hour, talking with Ronnie Talbot? And is Ronnie the godfather of the superfan on reality TV?
I really do think it comes to Cochran. He was the first one that really stood out. Not only was he the nerdy archetype, but it played into everything he did on his season. And the fact that he was a super fan of the game and brought that kind of meta level to it. I think it was a really engaging character. And then he came back and won. And then we had Ian. And then from there on, you know, almost every single winner of Big Brother, including Canada, has been a super fan. We had Netta almost win. Andy, Derek, Ian, Steve, Sarah. I mean,
Sarah Hamlin. Yep.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, so just to look at that, I'm trying to trace it out on a piece of paper. So Cochran first appears on Survivor in Survivor South Pacific, which airs in the fall of 2011.
11.
Yeah,
yeah, so 2011. That's when I first started listening to RHAP, Rob.
Okay, so that's the fall of 2011 when Cochran appears. Ian Terry would appear on Big Brother the following summer, which would be the summer of 2013. So there you have
12.
I'm sorry. Summer is 2012. So that's on the timeline there. And then who is the next super fan? Is there somebody else that then appears on Survivor?
Cochran wins in 2013 on Survivor Karen Mullen.
Yes, so that's going to be in Survivor 26. But do we have anybody in Survivor Philippines that fits that bill?
Well, you could argue that Colton kind of fit that bill in One World, right? And then Philippines.
But I don't think that Colton was presented. Colton was a super fan, but I don't believe that he was ever presented as this is the person who is the super fan of the show. Colton was presented as a completely different character archetype and not the super fan. So, you know, we can't really say, like, for instance, like Malcolm was somebody who was a big fan of the show. But to say that Malcolm is the same as Cochran is not, and the same as Ian Terry is probably not the right way to go. So I'm just trying to think if there's anybody. And I wonder also, I want to include women in this because I think you have certain people who are, you know, these female super fans also. But I'm not sure if there's anybody there in 25 or 26.
Wasn't Dawson like a big super fan of the show? I mean, she didn't get a ton of airtime,
supposedly. Did you watch Survivor Jeopardy?
Yeah. So
I don't know if there's anybody that we could sort of label in Survivor 25 or Survivor 26. And again, it's fans versus favorites, but I don't know if you want to get into like a Laura Alexander or anybody like that.
Rob, Julia Landauer. She's vanilla. She's a super fan. Yes.
I don't know about that. Yeah.
There were definitely some fans on the fan tribe.
But were they super?
Didn't make it very far.
Yeah, Reynolds was a huge fan, right?
Yeah. But were they super fans? Reynolds, super fan. Like, if you were going to describe them to another person, would you describe any of them as super fans? So I wonder if then it's Cochran winning that really, so like Ian Terry winning and then Cochran winning the following, like, because Cochran was winning Survivor in reality around the same time Ian Terry was playing in the Big Brother house. So you have that interesting parallel with the Hantzes where CBS is kind of Hantz happy at the point where they cast Willie Hantz on Big Brother 14 and also bring Brandon Hantz back. And it's all in that summer of 2012 when things just go to hell for the Hantzes. And within a matter of a couple of weeks that both Hantzes that aren't Russell have a meltdown and sort of like sully the Hantz name.
That's a really interesting point there, the transition from the Hantz era to the superfan era, just like that.
So Cochran wins in season 26 of, and that is what, May 2013, when Cochran wins his season in Karamoan. And then the next superfan, so was there anybody then in Big Brother 15, which is going to be that summer?
Andy.
Andy is officially that he's the superfan?
Yeah, well, I think I remember in McCray his bio. McCray was too, but Andy,
I feel like McCray fits that lineage more than Andy. I think that Andy's character type is not that you would say, okay, well, they're putting him. This is the gay person on the season, as opposed to McCray. If you were going to describe McCray in the preseason, like, okay, this is the super fan.
True, but I think that with Andy, like in his bio, he says, "Hey, I'm Andy, and I'm a Big Brother super fan." Like that's like one of the first things that Andy says. So yes, I agree that McCray is probably presented more as the super fan, but I think that Andy was still considered. I mean, you could still describe Andy in that mold as well. So I guess that one's up for debate, but I would still put Andy in that category.
Okay. I think what happened is that's like being a super fan got normalized and they started casting more super fans beyond just the role of typical nerd super fan person.
Yeah. I also think that especially in Survivor, I think that there was like a tipping point where Survivor starts to go away from too many recruits. And I think that they start to turn. I think that Survivor One World is actually the tipping point for that, where they decide, okay, we got too many recruits between, with all due respect, the great Christina Cha and people like that, that are just sort of like, don't really know how to play the game. Let's get more people in there who know how to play the game. And then you have in Survivor 25, I do think you have more people who have a familiarity with the show. That's where you get Malcolm, you get RC, you get other people, Pete Bro. Potentially, you have more people who are there, Denise, who are, longtime fans of the show. And plus you have returning players there to sort of like help that also. So then Survivor Blood versus Water is the next Survivor season that happens. And then obviously that's a different animal there, but you do have, because of the loved ones element, that they're more educated in terms of the games, in terms of, what they already know than the average group of fans. So that's a little bit of an outlier. But then we have Survivor Cagayan, and we have Spencer, who is probably the most alpha male of the super fans that we've ever seen on the show.
Yeah, that's actually, Spencer is probably the most alpha male super fan there is. He's actually good at challenges. He's, he's a stronger type. Taryn, go ahead.
Don't forget the crotch framing.
Yes, sure. Exactly. Can't forget that. So, Spencer is, if we're looking at somebody who's strictly being presented as this super fan type of character, I think he fits in that mold. But again, like a point that Taryn brought up earlier, is that I think at that point, kind of, there are so many of these super fans being put on these shows that they're a super fan. That's a thing. But also the fact that, they're a super fan, but also it's like Spencer saying Mitt Romney is my hero. Like Spencer had all of these, like, very, he went through casting and played this very, conservative, character that was like, that's very confrontational, all this kind of stuff. And I think they were kind of thinking, oh, okay, this is going to be a super fan, but he's also going to have this going for him. And then when he got on the show, it kind of was just, hey, it's just, good old nice Spencer.
Well, he also tried to play up the villain thing very hard throughout casting and in the pregame. And again, that might have been somewhat of a ruse to sort of get on the show, or that might have been something where circumstances sort of dictated the way that he ultimately ended up playing, because he ended up being in such a bad spot out of the gate. What about in Big Brother 16? Does Big Brother 16 mark the point where they attempt to go with the female superfan and double down on Christine and Nicole?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. That was interesting for me, because I feel like as somebody who's gone through the casting process multiple times, I view casting kind of a season of Big Brother or Survivor as putting together a puzzle. And if you look at Nicole and Christine, they are essentially the exact same puzzle piece. So yeah, it was very interesting that they doubled down on both Nicole and Christine in the same season. And it would have been interesting to see if maybe they would have split them up and to see, put Nicole on that season, maybe Christine on this season, or vice versa, and to see how they would have done instead. But yeah, I agree. I think that now, because we keep seeing this over and over again, it's the male superfans are winning. And I think CBS maybe wants to try out, hey, like, why can't one of these hardcore female superfans pull this thing off?
Yeah, Nicole and Christine did come right off the heels of Netta in Big Brother Canada too. So I wonder if that's kind of...
Yeah, and I think that probably Peter Brown is somewhere in, that's also in 2013 as well, coming off the heels of, the Ian and Cochran era. And then, so it's an interesting lineage to sort of track down here. And then, of course, here's Steve again, who wins in Big Brother 17. And I'm trying to think if there's any other Survivor then does San Juan del Sur. But then, of course, Max Dawson, who's the super fan from Survivor Worlds Apart. So they're definitely getting some mileage out of this, where you're seeing this much more so from this point where Cochran comes into the game. Whereas if you're watching really from the later seasons of Survivor, like Todd is a super fan. But then after Fan versus Favorites and the alleged superfans, I'm not sure if there's anybody in Gabon, in Token Sheens. I guess Spencer is, Spencer 1.0.
In Token Sheens, yeah.
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 And then also in Samoa, I don't think we're having any too many superfans in that era.
No, not really. Nicaragua.
Or at least being, that's their calling card in that they are the superfans.
Right, yes. Yes. All right, absolutely.
Let's bring in Jen here. Guy_Jen from Twitter. He's a legendary Blab caller. Jen, how you doing?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Very prolific on Blab. What do you think so far?
I like the show. It's really good. Speaking of super fans, I have a question for all you guys. Do you think Austin, who's allegedly a super fan, would have had a better likability factor if it wasn't for Jace the first week and the Judas character all the way through.
I think the thing that happened with Austin was because after Jace left, people did get on board with Austin. And I remember when him and Vanessa won HOH together, like everybody was like super excited. And then as soon as he kind of got into power, that combined with getting together with Liz and Liz thinking that she wasn't really into him at the time. And then the Judas thing, like it all came crashing down for him all at once.
I mean, I think even just America looking at him as a character, the Judas thing kind of puts us off because if you get rid of the Judas thing, you might actually feel bad for him with Liz.
Yeah. And I think that's a really good point, Jen. And I think that part of it too, and I don't know if this is just me, but I think that for America and Canada and whoever's watching these shows, I think a big thing that people don't really like is people that don't have any self-awareness. And that's a thing that happens with a lot of people that get cast on these shows. And Austin was not very self-aware about this whole Judas thing. And throughout the whole season, really, I mean, he thinks that him and Liz are the new Brendan and Rachel and all that kind of stuff. And I think that people were really turned off by that. So I think that if he would have just axed the Judas thing from the start, I think maybe thing, and he would have not done all this, yeah, put me on the Bold and the Beautiful and all that kind of stuff, I think it might be a little bit, I think it might have been a little bit different for him. I don't necessarily think that being attached to Jace is what made people feel towards Austin the way that they did.
Let me ask you guys a question, because going back to what I was talking about with Spencer, where we talked about where Spencer coming into Survivor Kageon had this character that he was trying to, you know, Mitt Romney is my hero and, you know, all these other people are idiots and I'm so much smarter than everybody and I'm going to make them all cry and stuff like that. And then the game situation sort of dictated to Spencer, boy, I really shouldn't be doing this. Do you think that Judas or Austin probably was in a spot where he could have said to himself, "Boy, I should drop this Judas act," but either because he lacked the self-awareness or production said to him, like, "Hey, like, give us some more of that Judas thing. What would Judas be saying right now?" Do you think that that sort of fed into that he just lacked the awareness to drop the Judas act? Because he did seem by the finale night, he was just sort of like, it was just me in the hat. I shouldn't have done it.
Yeah. Yeah, Mama Day just completely eviscerated him about it and just said, "Oh yeah, like, come on, what are you talking about, the Judas thing?" And like just ripped him for that. And he's just like, "Yeah, like whatever." And he just went on with it. So that's actually a really good point, Rob. I think that perhaps the diary room said, "Okay, well, hey, like, why don't you talk? So how's Judas doing? How are things in Judas land?" And talking about that kind of stuff with Austin. And maybe that is kind of what happened there. But I'm not really sure. It's one of those things that we'd have to ask Austin in an interview or something like that. And I'm sure you'll sit down with him at some point and we can figure that out. But yeah, I think that if there was no Judas thing, I think it would have been a little bit different. But I think that, yeah, that would make sense. Because I think that without Austin being that Judas type, would there have been a big villain on this season, really? Well, someone to root against, Taryn?
This might be crazy, but I think if Austin doesn't come on to Liz while being rejected at the same time, which always puts people off, and he remains the underdog, I think the Judas thing might work. If he's the underdog and he's talking about Judas and he's talking about messing with the status quo, I think people might be, with that.
It's a very interesting point. Jen, did you have something?
Yeah, I was going to say the Judas thing probably would also work if he actually made some flips, like, because that was his plan, was to use Judas as kind of a scapegoat for flipping and getting rid of people that he was aligned with. But he's aligned with Vanessa the entire game and does not, like, he begs her to stay. Like, how do you become strong and a heel if you are begging someone to stay in the game? Like, you have to actually have that turn and do the bad things that are associated with that character. And I just think he kept thinking, like, this is going to be my moment as Judas. And every time he was like, I can't go against Vanessa. I can't, which shows like a strength in Vanessa's game because he thought he couldn't make it without her.
Taryn, that's a really interesting point. Like, for instance, like if we were going to say, like, hypothetically, instead of Austin and the Judas character, if hypothetically at some point this season, Johnny Mac developed this other character, Judas Mack. And he was in the diary room and was like, you know, I'm not going to take this lying down anymore. It's time. No more Johnny Mack. It's time for Judas Mack to come out. And like hashtag Judas Mack. People would be going nuts on hashtag like, oh, I am in love officially with like with Judas Mack. I can't literally even like he's the best. And I think that people would have loved Judas Mack.
You're onto something. Johnny Mack needs to be listening to this.
Yeah. So I think that that's another thing to, again, that's for the future super fans on Big Brother 18 Gen. Maybe it's you. Maybe it's you, Taryn, that goes into the game. If you are not the underdog, if you are in the majority alliance, like don't create an alter ego that we're going to mock because we probably already don't like you. Whereas if you are the underdog, like throw anything at the wall, we will eat it up.
Yep.
So that's good. Interesting note. And so for Austin, what do you think is going to be the reality for him coming out of the house? I mean, that we've seen like the video of like, you know, people are sharing like where Steve goes to say hi to him and kind of blows him off. And people are sharing that and loving it. I mean, as Austin is sort of coming to terms with realizing that whatever popularity he thought he had in the house, he probably doesn't have. Jordan, what do you think that this ride is going to be like for Austin following this?
It's going to be a tough one for Austin, and I really do feel for him. And this is something that I talked a lot about on the Big Brother Happy Hour this summer, was that, yeah, he's going to be in for a rude awakening. And I don't know if he's back on social media or not yet, but I actually do feel bad for the guy, because I think that he felt like, oh yeah, like I got this great story and it's like me and Liz and I'm going to be on All Stars next year and all this kind of stuff, and I'll be on the Bold and Beautiful and I'm going to be a star, and he's not. And a lot of people are going to be, and a lot of people don't really like Austin. So, and I totally can relate to that firsthand. And you know, it's not easy. It's not easy, but at least with me, I came out thinking, okay, I'm probably not going to have a lot of people liking me. And so I was able to kind of build up a fortress, if you will, to protect myself mentally from getting everything. Yes. The fortress from feeling, you know, taking it really to heart and all that kind of stuff. I was ready for it. Whereas with him, I don't know if he's going to be ready for that. So it's going to be a bit of a tough adjustment, but I think he'll be okay. He'll get through it. I mean, it's going to be a little bit overwhelming for sure. And it is for everybody when they first get out of it. But Austin is a former professional wrestler. I'm sure that he's dealt with that kind of stuff before. And he seems like a pretty emotionally stable guy. I mean, we didn't really see Austin lose it at any point this season. I mean, did we, Taryn?
No, not really. I mean, there was one time where he stormed down to confront Johnny Mack. And almost immediately Johnny Mack disarmed him. Like, can we just calm down for a second?
Yeah. So I think that, yeah, I think Austin's a pretty strong willed guy. I think he's going to be okay, but it's not going to be fun, and I feel bad for him. So Austin, if you ever listen to this, if you ever needed somebody to talk to who is also not the most lovable person in the world, hit me up and we can talk. Cry over it together. It'll be great.
Okay.
I think you and Austin have a lot to relate with your, you and mind Cindy? Blank right now, but your Cindy? Women's situation, Cindy. Yeah.
Yes.
And yours went in reverse. She stopped liking you after her, but I think he's going to have the roughest time watching that footage of her in the diary room being like, oh, I don't really like him all that much. I mean, he's nice, but he's kind of gross.
It's not easy. And I think that at least for me, I got the, you know, I kind of figured that out in Jury House before I actually went back and watched the show. Whereas Austin, he was in Jury House by himself. Liz was in the house. So he didn't really have a time to decompress and talk with Liz. I'm sure they're talking and stuff right now. But yeah, watching, it's going to be tough for him. Absolutely. Seeing the Liz and Julia talking about him and saying, oh my God, and he smells, and the Julia throwing his stuff off the bed and all that
the Jesse stuff.
Yeah. And they're like,
the real Jesse question is, when did he shave off his beard ponytail?
Well, didn't she already cut it off?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Okay.
I think it was the night of the finale. He cut it off. It might have been the night after.
Was it that just go. Like a thing, like a production thing? Like they wanted to cut it off, but it was like that would have screwed up the edit. Like one of those things, like Adam Pock shaving his beard. That it's like, okay, well now we can't show stuff from before a certain point.
Well, they had an argument about it in the house when Shelley was the mediator of that argument, and Austin said, "I'd be willing to do it, but only if it was like really serious." So I guess when he came out of the house, it was like, all right, do or die. Are we doing this or not?
Yeah.
And I guess they were.
Okay. All right. Jen, anything else?
No, I'm satisfied with the answers here.
All right. Talk to you again soon. Spice an hour on Monday.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. See you there. Bye.
Bye, Jen.
All right. Bye. You know, we haven't talked at all really about Survivor, and I would like to touch on that before we start to wrap up this show. So if you guys have some Survivor topics to discuss, of course, we had the premiere episode to get into and a lot going on in the world of Survivor. Let me go to John here. John, how you doing, buddy?
What's up, guys?
How you doing?
Hey, John.
Hey.
Did you have a question?
Oh, yeah. You know, you're really going to talk about Survivor because really you've been mostly talking about, you know, Big Brother and Superfan.
So. Yes. So are you pitching yourself as the next Superfan? You're wearing John is wearing a Bion buff for those of you guys listening to the podcast version.
Yeah, I guess I was lucky this week, but hopefully that picture is, hopefully.
Yes. And hopefully the picture is the prophecy of the cursed picture is true. Did you have a question, John?
Yeah, I mean, really, Venus was mostly screwed about the instant tribal council. I guess I don't know how you call it, instant, or what do you call it?
Yeah, the immediate tribal council, the huddle.
Yeah, you could say that.
So you feel like Venus was screwed there? Because I certainly do.
Yeah, and really, Venus was like, what? Venus? Like, I thought it was going to be Abby Marie or BG.
Yeah. Were either of you guys surprised that it was Vetus? Because I certainly was. I did not. I thought that probably in my pecking order, I said, okay, I think it'll probably be Abby. And then I thought Shireen was two. And then I probably thought Vetus was three.
Yeah, I definitely was worried for Vetus. I mean, I was mostly, all my attention was focused on worrying for Steven. So I didn't really care about anybody else. But I was definitely worried for Vetus. I thought he was entertaining to watch. But he really reminded me, like, he's such a sharky personality that you got to be worried about him early on in any game. It's like, I mean, I can't remember the name now. Big Brother 15, what's his name?
Who?
Guy that went early. No, guy that went early.
Nick Juhas.
Yes, Nick Juhas. Very Nick Juhas-esque. Very sharky.
Interesting. I would say that Vetus, I mean, I think Vetus is more sharky than Nick Juhas is. Maybe I'm biased. I don't know. But I think that, yeah, I was surprised, Rob. And I think, but however, watching the episode, it just seemed like they were really pumping up that, oh yeah, it's Abby. Abby's got to go. And this is all a tribal council. And I just kept thinking in my head, well, if it was me there right now, if I could quantum leap into Spencer Bledsoe's body right now, I would want to get rid of Vetus because he's so good at the game. And we saw that in Blood versus Water. And had there not been that immediate tribal council, he could have weaseled his way out of it, just like he did with the swap in Blood versus Water. So I think that for all of the members of the tribe, I think that was probably the best move for their own games because Vetus is a huge threat to win any season, and Abby Maria is not. But yeah, I absolutely was surprised, and I was really sad to see Vetus go.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, who would you blame mostly for that? For Vetus going out? Was it really Barner? Because I think he was a swing vote.
Well, I think that Varner was certainly one of the people that swung, and we talked about this on the Know-It-Alls, that he definitely did not want to go and head into a potential tie vote. But it does seem like, from what we saw in the edit, that Shireen is probably the person that you have to get, say, has the most blood on their hands from that vote. She is the person who is identifying Vetus. He needs to be the person to go. And I think that, John, I'm going to let you go because I'm saying that it's a... Poor call quality, but thank you so much for the call, John. Okay, we'll talk to you soon.
All right, no problem.
Okay, but very good question about the Vetus thing. One of the other things that I saw come up yesterday, and again, so many things break from when we do the show on Thursday, was Jeff Varner tweeted about how PG Law got into some trouble because she confiscated, I think, Flint in the forms of jewelry and like things that were sewed into her clothes into the game. What do you think? Is that fair game? And what does that tell us about PG and her what her state of mind is heading into the game?
If Richard Hatch can do it, then I think anybody should be allowed to try, right?
I mean, that's really hilarious. So funny. Is that why she took Abby Maria's braces? Like, hey, I think that looks like Flint.
Well, Richard Hatch, I mean, that is so epic up his butt. I think that's amazing. I mean, but yeah, you know what? If PG wants to do it, fair game. Let her do it. I mean, this isn't Survivor Australia where Kel is bringing in beef jerky. I mean, this is, you know, she's trying to get some flint going, get a little bit of an advantage. And yeah, why not? I think that that's awesome that she tried doing that. But yeah, no, I was really interested by that. And did I see something somewhere too where Vetus apparently put the bracelet in PG's bag as well? Did you guys see that?
I didn't see that. No, I did not hear that come up.
Yeah, I think I saw, maybe I saw Vetus tweet that and he was joking. I'm not 100% sure.
I feel like that would have come up in the edit or in the, like, I think if Vetus actually did that, I think that might just be a little bit of an urban myth.
Wouldn't that make Vetus the Pete Bro of the season?
It would. Although Pete Bro was, it made it a lot further, but you know, that's for different reasons, I guess. But yeah, man, gotta love me some Pete Bro.
Yeah. So very funny about PG and the Flint, because I don't think they didn't get fired, did they?
No,
I don't think they did, because the Bros with the Joga Squad, they got it going, but not on that side, not that camp. No. So PG's Flint really could have helped them out.
Yeah. Okay, let's check in with the great Survivor Tyler. Here he is, not Tyler Fredrickson, Tyler K. From
How's it going, guys?
How's it going, Tyler? How you doing, buddy?
So far, so good.
So far, so good. All right. Am I gonna regret putting you on?
No.
Okay. All right. So, Tyler, what is it? What's the question?
Do you think if, like, let's say in an alternate universe, Rob, you're on Survivor, Steven's not. Do you think he'd be doing as well as he is right now?
In an alternate universe where I'm on Survivor and Steven's not?
Yeah, like you're in his spot.
Oh,
right?
So I am. So it's instead of, so it's my second chance. I'm on the tribe.
Yeah.
I think that I would be in exactly the same boat that Steven Fishback is in. I think that we would probably, there would not be much difference.
You'd be getting the winner edit too?
I think it would be very, very similar. I really do feel like, you know, and I think that one thing that has really been reinforced to me by, you know, how Steven's return has gone to this point is that I can never go back on Survivor. I think it would be exactly the same for me in terms of what it would probably end up looking like. This was a good reminder to me to get that thought out of my head.
Are you conceding defeat to the stick?
Yeah. I mean, I do think that while I am not a super helpful guy, I do think that I probably would be able to fake my enthusiasm for, you know, the love of the game a little bit more, like be like, I think I could sort of like get up for it to a degree more than Steven does not seem to be having. And I know he's not feeling well also out there. And he has like, kind of like, we have not seen Steven smile yet, I think through 90 minutes of television, whereas I think that I would probably have a smile on my face as much as I could the first time. I think that I believe I actually have the quote in Survivor the Amazon. I said that I was going to be smiling the whole time until my torch is out, and I'm still smiling. And I think that was probably the case in the All-Stars, where I think I was probably mostly happy up until the point that my torch is going out. Probably a few other times in that fourth episode, I'm having not some smiles on my face. But I think that I'm pretty much like, hey, I'm on Survivor. This is a pretty good day. So I think that I might be able to be a bit more enthusiastic than Steven is, but I think it would be probably 99% similar.
Do you think it's fair to say Steven needs JT more than JT needs Steven?
Well, JT's return didn't go particularly great, but I do think that Steven got a comfort level from JT that I don't think that JT necessarily needed. Like it's almost like that in the ways that their two second chances have gone, where it's like JT needed Steven more as like to get through like the middle part of the game to get to the end, whereas Steven needed JT more in the beginning part of the game to sort of get him through the beginning and sort of help him establish himself in the game. So I think that if Steven's, I think, ideal scenario would be to play with somebody like a JT and then they get picked off at the merge as sort of like a big alpha male threat. And then Steven is able to, once he gets to the merge, sort of be under the radar and be somebody who can then sort of like Cochran and Karamoan get to the end and win.
He needs Joe.
Yeah, he needs Joe Dowdle.
Yeah, that's why he was doing the yoga.
Yeah, oh, Joe, that Joe, Joe Angulum.
Yeah.
No, give me Joe from Token Sheets. Yeah, I think that's what Steven needs.
Joe Dowdle. Okay. Yeah, so I think that for Steven, I really just, you know, I think I would be in a very, and I think he also got a particularly unlucky draw with, like, it seemed like Jeremy was like, what do you think about fish? What do you think? You think fish is good? And Andrew is like,
I don't have a good feeling about fish.
Yeah, I don't have a good feeling about fish.
Savage does not have a refined palate.
He does not.
I don't think it'd be good to be on the Bayond Boring tribe. So
Bayond Boring. That's what you say. I mean, hard to say that that's a particularly boring tribe when you have people like, you know, Chaos Cass there and some other pretty big figures, and including Steven. I think that Jeremy is not a boring player. So. They did not have as much drama as Takeo, certainly, in 1 week, but I believe that there has to be some drama on the horizon.
And it's hard to be up against Abby on terms of entertainment, because Abby's just spectacular. I love Abby.
Yeah. One of the other things that I sort of wanted to talk about today, and I was watching some secret scenes last night, and there was not a ton of secret scenes that they really dropped, really like extended versions of like basically like 5-minute interviews with each of the players. They called them getting to know each person, which if you have some favorite players in the season, is probably a cool thing to check out. But one of the secret scenes I thought was interesting was talking about Mama Cass and the Hot Guy Alliance. And it was a scene about how Cass and Joe are kind of tight in the game, which is not something that that we saw on Wednesday night and not something that I would have expected. But Cass was talking about like, sorry, ladies, Joe is into all this. And she says that Cass, they're both rancher people, and that's why they get along so well. So look for a Joe and Cass. Jazz? Yeah, I don't know.
Co?
Yeah, I don't know what we're going to call that yet, but a Cass and Joe thing is happening. And kudos to Cass, who I probably have not given enough credit to in all of the podcasts this week, but has done a very nice job, because I think that all of us were saying coming into this first episode that the person who is definitely 100% out first is Cass. And I think that if they went to that first tribal council, I did not think that Cass would have been the first person voted out. So amazing job by Cass in the smallest of small victories of not getting voted out first or not in the position to be. Again, things can change fast on Survivor, but kudos to Cass who for being able to get that target off her back. And I did not think that she would be able to coming into the game.
Every trouble she gets by is amazing at this point.
It's absolutely a minor miracle that she can do it. And kudos to her, but not as good TV as when she's creating lots of problems. So we'll see. All right, Tyler, thank you. Thank you very much.
You guys have a good day.
Appreciate that.
See you later.
Bye.
See you, Tyler.
Okay. All right. Let's see. I've tried to get Adam on. We're having some problems with his connection before. Let's see if we can get it through. Adam.
How are you going?
Here you are.
What's up, Adam?
We did it.
Hey. Yes, I did. It's around 3 a.m. here back in Australia. So.
All right. So, Adam, thank you for staying up late for us.
Yeah, well, you know, I love to talk Survivor. I have a question. In terms of the Bayon tribe, who do you think's most likely to get an idol clue next week?
Who's most likely to find one?
Yeah, find one and try it out at the challenge.
Well, I think that you definitely have a number of people who have some interesting connections to idols. We have Jeremy Collins, who was never able to find one despite looking for it. We have Keith Nail, who an idol clue or an idol jumped out at him. He thought it was a snake and was petrified by it and had struggled to find it. We have Monica Padilla, who infamously played with Russell Hant. So she has a sort of an interesting connection to idols. We have Steven, who we saw out looking for the idol in the last episode. Right. So I think you could really come up with a story why a lot of these people are going to be on the hunt for the idols. And of course, you have Joe, who searched for the idol in Worlds Apart, never found it, and made up his own hidden immunity idol. Well, actually, but just before I get to that, one of the things I was a little disappointed by was when Kelly Wentworth found her idol in the first episode. We never got to see the opened idol because we were told the idols this season may not look like hidden immunity idols. So we never got a chance to see what the Wentworth idol looks like, whether it look, you know, it was a small sort of thing, but I don't know if it was a rock.
It could be a stick.
It could be a stick. Yeah.
Maybe it'll come later and it'll be kind of like a surprise.
Do you think that it was a possibility that Steven thought that that was the hidden immunity idol that he was wrestling with, that that was that stick? That Steven was trying to fight with?
Open it?
Yeah. He's like, this is the idol. I found it. Let me smash it open. But so
I think we were all hoping that for Steven, Rob.
Yes. So give me your pick, Adam. Who is going to find the clue?
Oh, do I have a pick? Oh, well, I want it to be Steven, but I think it might be someone like Keith. I don't think there was really anything in the edit on the Bayon tribe about idols besides Steven looking for it. So maybe, I'm at a loss at the moment.
Yeah.
I think Keith.
What do you think, Jordan?
I got a funny feeling that Sierra Easton's going to get an idol, so give me Sierra. Yeah, I think Sierra's going to find it.
Sierra had a couple idol clues back in Survivor Blood versus Water. One, she shared with Tyson, and then that was not a good idea because then he found it.
No.
Yeah.
No.
And Taryn?
I think with Steven looking for it already and then knowing that he's kind of on the outs, he's probably going to be the most motivated to find it. I think Steven could get it.
You know, I'm trying to think just in terms of the edit. I don't know if we have the person who searched for the idol, didn't find it, and then came back and then did find it. I feel like that it would be an unusual edit for any player to get. And I don't have anybody in my mind that I could think of that went through that same thing. Again, this could be, there's a first for everything.
It would be part of his comeback edit. He went out and tried to find it the first time. Now he's better situated in his tribe. He goes out and he finds it. And now all of a sudden it's like, yeah, I'm getting along with people. Everything's going good and I'm going to win the season. That's exactly what's happening.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a redemption edit. It's a redemption edit.
Redemption story for Steven. Well, hopefully that will be the case. All right, Adam, thank you so much for the call.
Thank you very much, guys. All the best. Cheers.
Okay.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks, bye. Adam.
All right. Very excited also for Survivor to come back. Of course, this Wednesday night is going to be our live show. Taryn, you're going to be there in person?
Yes, I will.
This is very exciting. So we're going to be there at Caroline's Comedy Club in New York City to do the live showing of the episode. I will try to Periscope that show. No live feed, no live stream in terms of Google Hangout that night, but then we are going to be recording audio and video that night, and we will get that up on the website as soon as possible. Plus, I will be then speaking with our big recap podcast for the week. I will be speaking with John Carroll, who's very excited to talk about Survivor this season. He's in an all-out blitz to be the next Survivor to get a second chance. And then getting into next weekend, I'm going to get into the Survivor voicemails. Jim Rice has reached out to me. He is dying to talk about the season.
All right.
I said, my big concern is the spoilers. He said, he is no spoilers for Jim Rice. So it should be a fun weekend of Survivor next week.
Yeah, looking forward to that. James Logan Rice. This should be a good podcast. I love Jim Rice.
Very excited. Jim Rice had tweeted during the week, happy to see Vetus go out because he didn't even try to get on the show.
Oh.
Jim Rice has the beef with everybody. He's definitely, I'm sure it'll be an eventful voicemail podcast coming up with Jim Rice.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm looking forward to that.
He wanted to be on there so bad. I mean, he's probably going to be very passionate about it.
Yeah. Okay. Let me know if you guys have any other questions for us, and we'll start to unwind this thing. Monday night coming up for you, Rob's podcast patrons. We're going to get back into our monthly patron cast. Going to do that on a Monday night. Always do that the last week of the month. That's where the patrons call in for the patron podcast and ask me all sorts of things. It's kind of a little bit like this, but you know, we go a little bit more into like behind the scenes of Rob's podcast and stuff like that. And then Tuesday night, I'm going to be jumping on a plane to head back into New York and be on the podcast with you guys back in New York City. And then I will be heading back here on Friday morning to get into everything coming up on Friday with all the podcasts we do between The Amazing Race and then also the new weekly scripted podcast that we're doing on Post Show Recaps called Most Shows Recapped with Josh Wigler and Antonio Mazzaro. And the first edition of that show, we talked about Heroes Reborn. Talked about the 2-hour premiere of that. Tara, are you a Heroes guy?
I was. I haven't seen the new one yet, but I did watch your podcast.
Yes. Yes.
It was a good podcast.
It was, you know what? I was not in love with Heroes Reborn, but if you were a Heroes fan, I think you were going to really enjoy it. Okay. Let me just take a quick moment and thank a sponsor for this episode of the podcast. And those are our friends over at Avant. And now there's a lot of people who are talking about money this week. Specifically, Steve Moses walked away with $500,000. We saw James walk away with $25,000, but it's not so easy to get it when you're in a pinch. And sometimes honest, hardworking people need a little extra. And that's where Avant comes in, because Avant provides access to personal loans from $1,000 to $35,000 without ever having to step into a branch. And God knows Stephen Fishback hates anything having to do with branches. Just go to avantoffer.com and they'll check your rate risk-free with no effect on your FICO score. And you could complete your application in minutes. You could see how easy and convenient it is to borrow through avantoffer.com. And Avant will give you a $50 amazon.com gift card when you make your first payment online. And for this offer, check your rate risk-free. Go to avantoffer.com, enter promo code RHAP. That's AVANToffer.com, promo code RHAP, avantoffer.com, promo code RHAP. Loans are made by WebBank and by affiliates of Avant in California. Loans offered by Avant are made under finance lenders license number 603K124. Funds are generally deposited via ACH for delivery next business day. If approved by 4:30 p.m. Central Time, Monday through Friday, Amazon is not a sponsor of this promotion. Other restrictions apply. See website for details. Guy Jen wants to know, was there ever another person kicked off a jury, or are you the only one? I don't ever remember seeing it before. Are you the only person to ever be voted out of the jury?
To actually be physically voted out of the jury, yes, I am the first person. In Big Brother 2, they were allowed to nullify two votes, so that sort of, I guess, counts. But there wasn't really, in Big Brother 2, there wasn't officially a jury of, you know, 7 or 9 or in our season 10. So technically, yes, I am the first person in Big Brother North America to be voted out of the jury. And it's a very prestigious honor to have.
It's a claim to fame.
There are also people that were ineligible for jury.
Yes.
Like Shima.
Yes. Yes.
So
yeah, that's true. That is true.
Yeah. So that you could be somebody who was in the mix for the jury, and then if you were badly behaved. Has there been anybody that's ever been to jury and then just like left and not wanted to do it?
Oh, that I don't think has ever happened. Yeah, no one's ever done that. I'm sure there have been cases where it's been close. I know, as somebody who has lived in a jury house, I know there were a few times where I myself wanted to just like go out and leave and try and get some information, but I didn't, because for different reasons that I won't get into. Mm-hmm. But yes, there's people I'm sure that have really wanted to and have gotten close to doing it before, but I don't think anybody's actually gone out and just left.
Because I feel like in Survivor, it certainly has happened with the pre-jury people. Like there's, you know, with Survivor, you get voted out and then they want to hold you there the whole time so you don't go home, and then your neighbor isn't like, hey, weren't you on Survivor? How come you're not still there? And then you don't have to explain things. And there have been people certainly that they want to leave then and you can't keep me here. I want to go home. And that's very frowned upon. But I wonder, like, how come it's never really, is it just the, with Big Brother, is it the, you won't get your stipend if you don't stay here? I mean, it's not like the stipend is that much money. What is it, like $1,000 a week? I mean, I think there's a lot of people that make more than that.
Rob, when you are a reality TV contestant, you're a degenerate on society. You don't have a job and you have nothing to go to.
But that's not every person that's on the show.
I do believe this did happen with the All Star jury. They broke out of the jury house and went to a bar, I think, and watched part of an episode, and they got in big trouble for it.
But
oh, really?
I feel like that's different than actually just saying like I don't need this. You know what? Asking a question in the finale is not worth this for me. I'd rather go home and see my family.
Yeah, nobody's like left and
gone AWOL.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
As far as we know, I mean, it could have happened and they just kind of swept it under the rug, but and had people, you know, sign contracts so that they wouldn't talk about it. But yeah, as far as we know, I don't believe it's happened. But I'm surprised. Yeah, I'm with you. I'm surprised it hasn't.
I mean, because it's not like it's so much money that you get to be on the jury. It's like, oh, my livelihood, please. I can't lose this Big Brother money.
Here's the thing, though, too, Rob. Like, as someone like living on the jury for a bit, for a very extended period of time, for 5 weeks, it's actually pretty nice because you're getting paid to sit on your butt and do nothing and eat food and watch old movies and TV shows and sitcoms and just lay around in the sun all day. It's actually, and drink alcohol. It's quite enjoyable, actually. I mean, so I kind of can understand why people wouldn't want to do it, but I can see both sides to it.
I feel like my jury experience certainly was a bit different in that, like, I didn't mind so much when I was living at Ponderosa in Survivor the All-Stars for about a week. That was actually kind of like, you know, I didn't mind that. It was always fun then to see who was going to be the next person to come out. But then in my particular instance, they sent like only a couple of us away. And I was with, you know, Rudy and Richard and Tina. And then Richard eventually left us and went on his own adventure. And it was just me and Rudy and Tina. And it was never like, okay, we're going to see the next person to come in. We're going to see the next person to come in. And I just found it to be rather boring. And they also took us to someplace that was very cold, which was not very fun. I wouldn't have minded staying by the pool. Like, I think that Colby and Jerry and Ethan went to like Mexico together. I think that would have been a lot more fun, especially like they would have been like a younger, more fun crowd, with all due respect to Rudy and Tina.
You didn't have fun with Rudy and Tina?
I did have fun with Rudy because I loved all the time I got to spend with Rudy, because it was so funny, like just telling me the same stories over and over and over again, which always made me laugh. But that being said, I just drank a lot during that time. And it was a very sad, depressing drinking.
That's what people that go voted out do, Rob. And it's a sad truth of reality television.
Like,
it's,
I just remember a lot of times, like, Rudy and Tina, like, would have just like gone to bed and it was just me, like, and they're like, okay.
and Rob, like, you were not a heavy drinker. I've heard you talk to Tyson on the podcast talking about how you going out and having people saying, hey, Rob, do a shot and do this stuff, and you don't want to do it. So you're not like a heavy drinker, but in that moment that's what you felt you needed to do. And same with me. I am not would not consider myself to be a heavy drinker before the show, but I feel like going on Big Brother and living in that jury house, that kind of made me like an alcoholic sort of for like 5 weeks, because you don't really have anything else to do.
Yeah. And again, when I played Survivor back in Survivor the All-Stars, I was 25 years old and certainly was a bigger drinker than I am at this point in my life, where I really rarely, ever have a drink. Once in a while, like, you know, it's like if I'm out somewhere, and especially if I don't have to drive, sure, it's a lot of fun. But for me, it turns out to, like, it's fun when you're doing it, but the part where, because I don't do it that often, the hangover, in the words of the great Alec Christie, that the juice is not worth the squeeze a lot of times. So for me, it's definitely fun. Like, I certainly acknowledge that, but just the hangover the next day is certainly not necessarily worth it.
No, that's the benefit of being a youth like Taryn and myself. We can get away with that sort of thing, right, Taryn?
I'm like Tyson. I don't really drink.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Wow. All right. So I guess I'm on an island by myself then.
Yeah.
But I'm sure if I did, I would handle it very well.
You would handle it very well.
I'm sure you would. You're a young lad, as am I.
Okay. Just to bring it all home, we talked about Big Brother. We talked about the Survivor. In terms of the Amazing Race premiere, Taryn, are you an Amazing Race guy?
I am. I didn't see the premiere though. So
okay. Well, I don't want to ruin it for you. Jordan, did you see it?
I did. I watched it this morning and I was, I thought it was pretty good. I like the teams. There was some interesting, I mean, we have Team TMZ and we have like a paparazzi team. I mean, there seems to be some interesting pairs on the race.
Yeah, why do you think CBS decided to have a paparazzi team and a Team TMZ?
I have no idea why they did that, but I don't know. Maybe I think that the TMZ team, I think those girls are pretty entertaining. So I think that that's why they put them on the show. And I guess they both are just good. And I think sometimes in casting, and just what it comes down to is who's the best. And if you happen to have two teams that are both excellent, they just happen to have similar occupations, why not just put them both on the show? And I think maybe earlier we were talking about that with Nicole and Christine on Big Brother 16. I think maybe that's a little bit of a similar thing that happened here with the Amazing Race this season.
Yeah. It's just an odd thing to me to have, like, and not say, okay, we're going to save Team Paparazzi for Amazing Race 28 and not have TMZ and Paparazzi together in one season. I feel like that's sort of like an odd, not thing to have in one season, but it's not like that's like such a popular archetype that it's like, oh, well, they always have the Paparazzi team on the season, so what's another one? Just seems like a really...
Maybe now, Rob, maybe it's starting. The paparazzi takeover, that'll be the new theme. The superfan theme is dying, and now bring on the paparazzi era of CBS reality TV shows.
Taryn, what do you think of this that Kelsey in the chat room brings up, that they had a Big Brother 16 team ready to go who potentially got cut late in the game? Do you think that one of the paparazzi teams ended up being the fill-in?
That's definitely a possibility. I heard a lot about that. With Zach potentially being on The Amazing Race with either Devin or Frankie, and people just kept dropping out, and there's a bit of drama going on around there.
Yes. And so ultimately, they did not end up using anybody from Big Brother 16. And so do you think that that was potentially the team that got pulled in?
It must be. It's definitely in the similar kind of area. So
in the same vein.
Yeah, that would totally, that's actually a really good point that you bring up, Rob. Yeah, because if you have a team TMZ, two people that applied, they're right there. You could easily just pick them up and say, hey, do you want to come in the music? Like, we want you now. Can you want to do it? I'm sure they were like, yeah, absolutely. Why not? Or maybe, I guess they probably what happened was, yeah, they were the, because they have alternates, right? Ready to go for this show. So team TMZ was probably one of the alternates, and perhaps the team Zanky or whatever the team Zach was on with Big Brother 16 people got cut at the last minute. But I think, oh man, a Zach Rantz and Devin Shepherd team might, that is the thing that dreams are made of, Rob.
Yeah, that would have been really great. I would have loved that. And probably more so for the Devin.
Me too. Yeah, I'm with you.
Like, more could we so get like a Devin and Audrey Shepherd team?
Devin in a taxi. Come on. I have a daughter. You need to go faster.
Bro, come on. Can we go a little faster?
Where's your integral driving skills?
Honesty, loyalty, integrity, taxi. Like, why can't we move faster, bro? Yeah, that would be good.
Yo, street dancer team and Team Green and doctors and newscasters, bros. We all got to make a new bomb squad, bro. We gotta turn each other. We got to stay together. I mean, good time. One of us is going to win. It's a good alliance, bro.
Yeah, that would be pretty good. So I hope so. Who's the Big Brother 17 Amazing Race team? Who's going to be on Amazing Race 28? I think I talked about this maybe with Eric Curto in the last voicemail segment of the season.
I think it's Megan James would be good, or Clelly. I think those would be the two I would go to.
Taryn? Yeah, I think James, and then you either pull in somebody James knows or Meg with him.
You think James with like a random?
I think so. I think James is a character they'd want on Amazing Race. I think he'd be fun to have.
Now, traditionally, it has not been fan service that they do on this. Like at the point when they're bringing on like Keith and Whitney, it's not necessarily like, oh, well, this is the most popular couple. We want to do fan service and make people happy. It's more so the name brand recognition from the show. I almost feel like, do you think that we could see Lizton?
Yeah, as soon as you said that, I was like, whoa, I definitely can see that now. I mean, we got Allison and her ex.
And Donnie, yeah.
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 Or I guess he wasn't ex at the time.
Yes, not her ex.
Yeah, that was a long time ago, though. That was a long time ago. Do you think that we could see the Nolans without Austin? What's more likely?
Ooh, I think I would rather see the Nolans together. Liz and Julia had some great sound bites.
That would be a much more typically Amazing Race team, identical twin blonde bikini models. 20s. Yeah.
It would be 20s 2.0 for sure.
20s 2.0.
Come on, Twinny, let's go.
Twinna, come on, Twinna.
Oh my god.
It would be Liz yelling at Julia all the time.
Yes. Taryn, I saw in the chat room before, you said you thought Liz was good on the interview, on the exit interview.
Yeah, she was very nice and cheerful and
I was pleasantly surprised with the Liz interview.
Yeah, and she seemed very interested in you and your podcast.
Yeah, she knew it. She knows Steve really prepared them.
Yeah,
because I opened it up and I was like, hi Liz, how are you? My name is Rob Sistrin. I'm a person that talks about reality TV.
I know.
So I was very impressed.
It was very like Big Brother Canada 3 when people came out and they were like, oh, we know about you. Jordan's been
Very much so. Yeah, I really do feel
people
like...
people do that?
Yeah.
They did. Wow. Okay, I didn't know that. I haven't listened to them yet.
Yeah. At Inclusive Host in the chat room says that she was more prepared for your podcast than for the jury.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I do think that there's a very realistic possibility of potentially Liz Tin here in the studio, because from what I understand, I believe that Austin, that he lives close to where I live. So if we ever get in touch with Austin, I have a sense that that I think he would be a very gettable guest to come into the studio.
I think everyone would be super excited for that.
So, yeah.
Get ready for a takeover!
What? Oh, no.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Everyone's favorite podcast, the greatest podcast of all time.
That's kind of a Austin word.
Yeah. I don't know about that. Okay, so it could be a Judas and Liston takeover. All right. That being said, all right. Thank you guys so much for doing this. This was a lot of fun. I don't know if this is going to be necessarily a weekly staple. I think that there'll probably be some weeks where I have more going on Saturday than less, but I feel like that this is something I think that this was a lot of fun to do. And I would love to keep in the bag of tricks and be able to pull out whenever there's a especially busy week of stuff like this one.
Yeah, I'm down, Rob, whenever you want to do it. And thank you so much for having me. I really do appreciate it.
Yeah. All right. Well, of course, you could listen to Jordan Parhar. Jordan and then is getting ready to talk with Haley Strong this week on the Big Brother Happy Hour. Is that back to back with this?
Yeah,
I totally lost track of the time, Jordan. Sorry about that.
No, it's all good. It's all good. Yeah, we were supposed to go about 20 minutes ago.
Oh, my God. Why didn't you let me know?
But, yeah, it's all good. It's
sorry,
all good.
I totally blew it.
No, all good, Rob. It's fine.
We're having so much fun.
Yeah, having such a fun time. I had a blast. So I'm going to jump over onto YouTube. We're going to do a Google Hangout with Haley Strong. So definitely, if you want to listen to us talk about some Survivor, might talk about some Twitter drama going on, that kind of stuff. Definitely, if you want to check that out, feel free to
Twitter drama going on with me?
Maybe with some with you, Rob. Yes, some Twitter drama there was yesterday. So I'm excited to talk about that.
All right, listen to Jordan for that. I'm sure it's going to come up on the Patreon cast.
Yes, oh, it will. It will.
All right. So thank you so much. Jordan, I hope I was a good lead-in audience for you.
Oh, yeah. This is a great lead-in audience.
Yeah, hit.
If I can get 1% of these viewers over to my show, I think that'll be an increase. So I'm very, very excited. So thanks, Rob.
Okay.
So people.
Follow at Jordan Parhar on Twitter. And thanks for Taryn Armstrong for coming by also. At Armstrong Taryn. And thanks everybody who called in and joined us live here on the show. I'll give you a hashtag. Go with hashtag Judas Mac for the hashtag for the show. I think that was a good one. All right. Thanks so much for watching us, and lots of fun here on Blab. We're going to be doing Spice an Hour coming up on Monday, probably sometime around Monday afternoon. We've been doing them around 1 p.m. Eastern on Mondays for the Spice an Hour with Spencer and Tyson. Have a good one, everybody. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye.